Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello, and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Krangis McBasketball, a.k.a. Tim. How's it going, Tim? We are still now just a couple weeks removed from the lack of Lakers basketball. Are you hanging in there, dissecting, you know, old Jay Triano plays, learning offensive goaltending rules? I'm at the bar the other night telling people you can't make a shot out of bounds, so it can't be basket interference. And, like, you know, for a layman, even that, they're like, oh. So it was pretty funny to watch people kind of learn the rules as we go. But, yeah, did you appreciate that last play? And is there anything you'd maybe do differently now that the cat's out of the bag?
I think it's a pretty sick play. I didn't think about the basket interference piece of that, but I've always, like, assumed, hey, if there's not much time left, it's a good idea to get a back screen for a big dude to, you know, have a lob option at least, especially when you have a guy like Booker or some sort of shooter that the defense probably won't want to help off of. So I thought it was a great play call. Happy to see that. It's been fun to watch basketball and, like, not have to rewatch it and not have to break it down and make videos and do podcasts. And instead just enjoy the game. And I think especially the Western Conference Finals have been a lot of fun for me because those are two teams with two coaches that do a pretty good job adjusting. I think Monty game plans out the gate better than Ty Lue. And we've seen Lue the past couple series have to, like, make big shifts mid-series. But they've both been, like, that's been just a really entertaining series. And the East is not quite at that point from a coaching standpoint, but there's a lot of fun stuff going on there as well. So it's been fun for me, but it's given me time to, you know, work the phones or work the DMs, I guess, and explore some trade options that you just 2 minutes ago told me were all terrible. So I'm excited to, I'm excited to dig into those.
I'm going to continue to nag all of the ideas coming through just like we did last week, but
you don't need to play devil's advocate. You can just play you. I think some of them I like literally reached out to, like, people from like 25, 23 different teams and found some trades for some. There were some players where they're like, fuck you, no, you can't have him.
Also, you're like, so they're probably like, yeah, really, fuck you.
Yeah. So I did find a handful. I think I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I have like 9 or 10 different trades that I got someone else, another real life person who covers that team, to accept, and I will present them to you today. Maybe we take them, maybe we don't take them. We can kind of order which ones we think might be most useful for the Lakers, or maybe the person I talk to is, we think, unrealistic compared to how the team might act. So we can dig into that, but it was more fun, and I'm more excited to do this podcast with having done that pre-work, because we can show up here and just throw random stuff at the wall, but we don't know if anyone's going to accept it. These are ones where you actually get a feel for, like, who does that team value? Oh, yeah. I thought this guy would be a throw-in. No, they actually see him as part of the future.
It's just a lot more, like, context, really digging into
the,
right?
Yeah, the cap, what they, you know, their perspective, what they think the team might do. So we can go into these, at least leaving this with, like, knowing that, you know, in a general sense, these might actually be realistic options. If some of them I wouldn't take, I don't think the Lakers would take, but it was good at least to know the price for some players. Cause if you don't do that work, we can, again, throw random trades at the wall and it might not be realistic at all. Like, the Lakers aren't going to get CJ McCollum. I couldn't find a CJ McCollum trade. So we don't have any CJ McCollum trades today.
Are you saying we're not going to trade for Ben Simmons?
We're probably not going to trade for Ben Simmons given what Sixers people are looking for Ben Simmons. So yeah. So there's a tier of guys.
I really wanted the no shots in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's fun talking to people, you know, at a bar and pick up games and then be like, yeah, Lakers need to trade for Bradley Beal. Lakers need to trade for Zach LaVine. Like, yeah, absolutely. I don't think they can, though. Like, Kyle Kuzma isn't netting us Bradley Beal. Like, some of these guys, the Lakers have a couple trade chips. We talked about that on the last pod. It's like KCP, THT, Kyle Kuzma, Schroeder. If he's re-signing, like a sign and trade with him, the 22 pick, you have Gasol potentially. that's kind of what you're working with. You don't have these great assets. You also don't have much salary filler.
Right.
So if you're trying to trade for a dude who's on a small deal, Kuzma's making money. THT's going to be making money once he signs his new deal. Schroeder's going to be making money. Like, these aren't, other than that 22 pick, you don't really have, you know, extra money for players that you don't care about to throw around. Like, if McKinney were making 10 mil, you know, there's some salary filler. But on the other end, if another team, like, if we're trading for guys making little money, we don't really have those assets that are also kind of cheap to exchange the way that the Lakers used to have with guys like Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, whatever.
Well, so yeah. I was just going to say, last week we talked a little bit about like what the Lakers had, right? Not saying we definitely want to get Kuz off the team, but I feel like we left out, we don't want to, but the Lakers have Alex Caruso as well. And I think Alex Caruso is a piece that could help you get a better player, you know, in a package of Caruso on a sign and trade, Kuzma, you know.
Yep. And he came up. He came up when talking to teams. Yeah. Cavs people I talked to.
Absolutely.
They're interested in Caruso. Yeah.
They should. So really quick, before we get started on who you did agree with, I want to clarify on the no's you got. So you got no's on Jeremy Grant. I'm guessing this was pre-draft lottery.
And this was pre-draft lottery.
That changes their Detroit's outlook at all, because Cade Cunningham is a bit of a wing. He can play a couple positions. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they can't fit next to Jeremy Grant by any means, but Jeremy Grant was always kind of on a, I hate to say, a different timeline, but they're in a full rebuild and he's in that, you know, mid early prime of his career. So is there any scenario where, you know, Kuz, THT in the 22 maybe makes more sense for Detroit today than it did last week?
It could. I do agree that it could, and I'll have to follow back up and see if anyone would take that. So I'll talk to my Detroit people, but as of, you know, before the draft lottery, and like you said, it changes things, Jeremy Grant was not someone I could get a deal done with. A couple other players that I couldn't find deals for were Gary Trent Jr. from the Toronto Raptors. Couldn't find a trade that they were willing to take. They didn't want any of the Lakers players. Didn't think they were a good fit. CJ McCollum, he's valued too high. Ben Simmons, he's valued too high. And not like overvalued, but valued higher than the Lakers have assets to trade for. Bradley Beal, another guy that, even though his deal's up relatively soon, he's not someone that the Lakers had a competitive package to go after compared to some other teams from what those folks were telling me. So there are some that like I see floating around that I don't think are realistic. Zach LaVine is another one that like the contingency on a Zach LaVine trade would be like Zach LaVine says, I'm never coming back and I only want to go to the Lakers and I'm not re-signing with anybody. So barring something crazy like that, which could happen to any player on an expiring deal and likely won't happen for most players, we haven't really seen that happen other than a time or two, it's not realistic to go after some of those guys. So we'll just start off by throwing them out and then kind of working towards some more realistic targets. And from a Lakers perspective, you're not like, you don't have the package to go get a third star. You have a package to go find similar caliber players that fit better, that are more coherent with the LeBron and AD lineups, or the AD but without LeBron lineups, or vice versa. So there are ways to address and improve the roster without necessarily needing to like go get some sort of superstar, some sort of all-star or former all-star or something like that. And along with that, I think, you know, looking at guys that we can optimize is important. Looking at, you know, how are they used currently? How would the Lakers use them? What does that change? You're not just chasing points, rebounds, assists, blocks, steals, whatever. Those can change based on situation. So looking at the current players' environment, how those current players are used, and then getting a feel for how the Lakers might use them is another key piece of this, along with everything else that's being considered. So we're looking for guys to help us win now. We're looking for guys that either we can optimize better or are currently in a role that like makes sense to slide over. And I think shooting is something we talked about before. Ball handling could be helpful. But for me, I was really looking at shooting. And then also, like, if you are going after a big man, go for somebody who has several skills, or if you can get a throw-in big man that can do a couple things well. Like those are kind of just the general you know, backstory. And you know, after covering that, I think that's what I'd be looking for in a trade. Tom, what sort of skill sets, I think, would you be chasing after if you're Rob Pelinka, trying to improve this Lakers roster with the pieces that you would be sending out? Because if you lose KCP, you're losing some shooting, you're losing some of that good defense. Caruso, you'd be losing a lot of defense. Kuzma, you'd be losing some athleticism. What are you trying to bring in, and how do you make that a net positive?
There's a number of things, and we talked a little bit last week where more and more I keep thinking about like team speed and just having a couple. And if you lose Caruso, right, another guy, Kuzma, these are guys who can play fast and they're in that prime of their athletic youth. So there's an element of some athleticism. I would be really worried if we got like a 33-year-old, 34-year-old something coming up here, you know, just because of the every position. Yes, Anthony Davis is an athletic beast, but you can't rely on him cleaning everything up on the back end just to be, you know, functional. So there is an element of defense I'm still looking for too, Tim, where they can't just be a turnstile. They also have to fit a certain role with those guys are replacing, right? So you listed a couple guys that have different skill sets. If you get rid of one of those, they all have skill sets that are important. Those need to still be replaced. And you can't, you probably can't split that between two players because of just the minutes, right? So if you do, if that guy doesn't have this skill, you get another guy and you kind of mishmash that the two of them into one role. That's a lot harder to do, especially with the kind of talent pool you're thinking of, probably for the minimum, you know, at that point, because I feel like the taxpayer MLE would be, you know, a different kind of higher level, hopefully, player that's just kind of taking a discount. But that's just kind of the Lakers brain of mine working, you know, because we do get stuff on the discount sometimes, the ring chasers.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm thinking about Kuzma as well with his ability to go after offensive rebounds. That's something that we praised and saw a lot of earlier on, middle of the season. Later on, it was, I think, less impactful because we got Andre Drummond. He was out there cleaning up those boards and having those two guys crashing, you know, clog things up a little bit. But it was more Drummond being the one pulling in those boards instead of Kuz. And if Drummond doesn't return, which we think may happen given LA's spending power compared to what he's looking to get from a contract standpoint, suddenly that skill set for Kuz does become more important. So if you replace him with a less athletic 34-year-old shooter, you probably lose that element of your game. So
who might we be talking about? I think it's time to bring it up. So what's the first trade?
So the first trade that I got multiple people to agree to who cover the Utah Jazz is the Lakers obtaining Joe Ingles in exchange for Kyle Kuzma and the 22 pick. From a Utah standpoint, this makes sense for them because they need some athleticism. They need some defensive versatility. Kuz can kind of guard two through four. So that adds value for them. He's someone that can help them on the boards. He can rotate over and block some shots every now and then. He is someone that can play some on-ball defense against a lot of players. And when we think about how Ingles is used for them, his top scoring action this year was ball handling. The pick and roll. As a pick and roll ball handler. So that's something that for an aging player is probably going to drop off a little bit quicker than his shooting talent, which is still very valuable. But within their system that runs so many ball screens, that, you know, is a little bit more of a diminishing skill set for them compared to bringing him in for the Lakers. He is like a legit top elite 3-point shooter, high volume, high accuracy, catching and shooting, pulling up. And the Lakers won't necessarily need to ask him to be that pick and roll ball handler. So even as he's getting older, which I acknowledge, and I think he will diminish physically, I don't expect the kind of drop off from his 3-point shooting that I expect from his pick and roll ball handling. So it makes me feel better about like he's going to matter less for them than he will for us. Yeah. And that trade works out well. And like he shot 45% on threes, 41% on pull up threes, 48.9% on catch and shoot threes, 44% on above the break threes, 47% on corner threes. Those are all elite, elite numbers. 99th percentile 3-point shot making, 96th percentile 3-point shot creation. This is someone that in a starting unit is someone you cannot help off of and will provide spacing for LeBron and AD. He's someone that can run off some motion, use some off-ball screens, and is someone that had an A-minus off-screen efficiency this year, B-plus off-screen share. So when the Jazz were running those pin downs and flare screens, he was commanding a high proportion of those. So he adds a couple elements of shooting offense, and in a way that is somewhat scalable because of his ball handling ability, because of the off-screen stuff. So if you're in a bench unit, he can still get his shots up. He's not a KCP that if he's not being fed threes, he's not going to shoot threes. That I think that's a big difference. And looking at the difference between, like, you know, kind of like finishing shooters and guys that can create their threes. And Ingles is a guy that can create his threes. So that's what I'd lead off with. I have some other, you know, things that I think would be really valuable with him. But, like, what are your initial thoughts bringing Ingles in for this trade?
Like, you're not going to convince me Joe Ingles on the Lakers would be bad. I think Joe Ingles is a very good player. And the thing about him that makes me really excited in this kind of scenario is the way he can manipulate defenses in the kickout process, right? Mm-hmm. So he's fantastic at that pump fake, right? The pump fake to swing, you know, keep the ball swinging, and then you're left wide open. He does that so well. But he also can attack a closeout and hit, you know, and make a play a lot more consistently and, like, safely than, like, a KCP, right? Mm-hmm. So there's, like, different layers to that. Like, he will be able to manipulate the defense in a way on the weak side that will get him and his teammates great shots. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's Anthony Davis, Andre Drummond, and LeBron James around him, it's tough because that shooting is still not quite good enough. You know what I mean? Like, yes, he fills a big hole there. Even if you slot him in for KCP, right? He can kind of, like, I think you were saying before, you told me he's got some chaser ability on defense. That's, you know, intriguing to me. And I think Kuzma is a valuable piece, but I think they can, you know, patch it with some of the defensive versatility. Again, that's a big thing Utah should want. They basically only have Royce O'Neal to guard, like, those guys, and to have just another guy to be able to plug in is helpful for them. And they have enough shooting. They'll be pretty okay without Ingles, right? So it makes sense for them. But they can be a very smart, not as athletic team and still beat a lot of teams, definitely. But if you run into a team, a young team that's got some bounce, it's just an added challenge for a group like this where, and I guess, Tim, ultimately, I feel like if it was Kuzma and a smaller second piece than the 22, I'd be more intrigued. I don't know. I just love those scouts having a 20s pick. You know what I mean? But I get it. But this think is about the trade you threw up I like the most, I think.
Okay. And with that 22 pick, let's assume the Lakers get a good player that can fill a role. They're probably going to draft a more experienced guy. They're looking for someone who can contribute to the team.
To replace Kuzma, some kind of athleticism, right?
Yeah, yeah. But if you're planning on bringing back Schroeder, planning on bringing back Caruso, THT, where in this team that often had, like, an 11-man rotation during the regular season, who do you cut out for, like, it's, I don't think the caliber of player that you get at that level of pick, and I do think the Lakers will overperform. They've done a really good job drafting, and I will say a lot of those draft picks kind of bloomed few years later. I don't know if them going after a dude they think is going to contribute right now is the same game plan from a scouting standpoint as them being able to identify guys that can blossom into upside, really good NBA players. Yeah. So it's a different approach from a scouting standpoint. That's so true. While I trust them, it's a different game. And if they are going for someone who can contribute now, which I think is what they would plan on doing, where does that person find time? And is that time that player can get worth not making a significant upgrade in my eyes from a shooting standpoint, from a playmaking standpoint? You're taking out a bench guy, adding in a starter with Ingles. And he's someone that can play with the starters and the bench.
To me, it's just, I'm not as worried about those uncertainties that you said. And especially over the last few years, more and more players are contributing the first year. And it's not just this guy is fantastic, out of this world talent. No, they're being used in the right ways. Coaches are being smarter with their rookies and not just benching them flat out of the gate. They're saying, I can use this guy.
Right? I agree. Who are you benching instead? I don't know where that player would get minutes. If they're playing point guard,
right? So Joe Ingles is now our starting two. So you have KCP backing him up. So THT is your backup point because Caruso is basically a two guard on offense. So it's like there's still skills that need to be fleshed out in this. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, but like Keith is going to be a minimum bench guy that comes back. So he's not a big rotation needs minutes guy. Is Marc Gasol going to retire? So we don't know all of it totally yet. So there's still like pathways to opportunity. I feel like
It's not as clear, but like, you can certainly get there. I agree with you.
It's back just to not Engel. As, sorry. Go ahead.
I've got more. He's good at stuff. I got a lot of fun data for you. His getting to rim rating B, pretty good. He's not just a shooter. This isn't a standstill catch and shoot. Don't do anything else guy. He drives more than 83% of NBA players. Now he passes out a lot on those drives, but his assist rate is also super high, 94th percentile. And that to me is showing me like, this is a guy, like you said, he can catch, attack a closeout and then create something for somebody else. He's not driving and then kicking out because there's just nothing available and he can't finish at the rim. He's driving, extending an advantage and then finding the open guy. So that's encouraging to me. He's finishing at the rim on shot quality that's lower than 99% of players this year was pretty damn strong. A minus finishing at rim rating. So A minus total overall finishing talent grade. And then from a playmaking standpoint, I don't think people realize how good a playmaker he is. His volume, A minus, efficiency, really A minus, versatility, B plus, quality, really A minus. Like crazy smart dude. And yes, his athleticism is going down a little bit, but I see that fitting really well with him being a third, fourth option with a starting unit that is going to feed him the ball with an advantage. And either he takes that three because he'll drill that, or he's got someone wildly closing it out. He can attack that and then find the open man. So
he can run an offense, really.
He can, run a bench unit.
Yeah, he can run a bench unit. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's really impressive to me. His individual rebounding, also very good. 93rd percentile offensive rebounding success rate plus minus. So when he gets chances to rebound, he's winning those battles. On defense, 98th percentile. So like he's good for his position at doing those things. And when we talk about his defensive versatility, in our defensive positional versatility metric, he and Kuzma were tied this year. Which I mean, I certainly watch more Kyle Kuzma than I watch Utah Jazz basketball, and Tom's over there scoffing, but 95th percentile positional versatility and B minus matchup difficulty for Ingles compared to 50th percentile C matchup difficulty for Kuzma.
Okay.
So, hold on.
So let's break down the Jazz offense to get some context here. Who goes where the best player is? Their defense, excuse me. Who goes where the best player is?
Royce
O'Neal.
Okay.
Royce O'Neal guards the best wing, right?
Yeah, he'll go 1-3.
So is he versatile because he's versatile, or is he versatile because Royce O'Neal is versatile and Joe Ingles just goes that like fills the other gap?
I think that's a fair. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Joe Ingles' job this year was as a chaser. He defended, 1-4 pretty well.
But somewhere in the middle. I think Kuzma is more versatile, but I think Ingles is underrated in that respect.
He's underrated. My final point. He's a chaser defensively. He's played some wing stopper in the past. He's had other seasons with really high matchup difficulty as well and pretty high versatility. So while I think the point you're making is definitely contributing to this, it's a reason why he's guarding ones or guarding threes more often than he otherwise would, because Royce is the one kind of pushing everybody else, shuffling them around.
Yeah.
Another piece of it is he is still taking pretty hard matchups. So that is encouraging to me. From a defensive impact standpoint, he's had one season in his seven-season NBA career where he's had a negative defensive impact, and it was just barely negative. So going into this, I was like, yeah, like he's not going to help a bunch on defense, but I don't know if he's a negative or not. No, he's been a good to average defender, and I think throwing him in that chaser role, it makes good bit of sense. He can play some wing stopper. He's not going to be my wing stopper in the playoffs, but I think he's a serviceable defender that's versatile enough that within the Lakers infrastructure, I'm certainly comfortable with adding him in. And if that's the case, the upgrades you get from a playmaking and shooting, off screen, all that stuff standpoint, finishing, I think is well worth the upgrade. So it's, again, you lose the potential with that 22 pick. I think we know who Kyle Kuzma is at this point. You go from a bench guy to a starting guy. This, if you make no other trades, no other moves, bring back the same sorts of players, you end up moving KCP to your bench to play with THT, which provides some spacing for THT or Caruso or however they want to run that group. But I think I like this. And if the Lakers did want to go to a lineup of like similar to the year they won the title, pre-bubble where they would have a nominal point guard. They go KCP at point, Ingles at two, LeBron, AD, and like, I don't know, Marc Gasol or somebody. Or you can even throw in another wing and have AD yeah. play the five. Those are, I think those could be really, really interesting lineups.
My last point on Ingles that I like is that, to me, and we'll talk about another guy here in a second where I'm less convinced this can work. You have to separate individual defensive ability and ability to understand and execute team scheme. Mm-hmm. So Joe Ingles falls squarely in that second category to me, where despite some of his physical limitations as a defender, I'm confident his IQ and his ability to fall within the defensive scheme will make him a better defender because he's doing the things the team wants him to do, right? Because it's not all about athleticism on defense. Of course, it helps, and it helps you solve, like, cover your mistakes, right? But
yeah,
you don't need that when you're like all on the same page. And I don't know, if you were to do your last thing on Ingles, the next guy you have is the centerpiece of a trade I want no part of on in the defensive scheme. Like, I don't know how you fit him in. So I don't know if that's a tease or you can, you know, we'll take a quick break and come back, I guess, because we're about halfway through. So let's do that.
Join us after the break where we talk about someone we want no part of.
That's me.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, and we're back. Let's reveal this next second one, right? So Kyle Kuzma and Talen Horton Tucker for Buddy Hield. And I feel like you're just trolling me to throw in Damian Jones here. Is that necessary like Jones. For cap, or is that just trolling everyone?
No, this is... It is a he's a I mean he's a real
yeah.
basketball
player. Yeah, the they Kings took signed him though.
He played like, great, and they re-signed him. I talked to somebody who has some insight into the Kings locker room, talks to Kings players, has some good connections. They like Jones. They want to keep Jones. But this deal would be a deal where they would let go of him and Hield because they like what THT can provide. That for them would be a really nice upgrade, a good piece along with Kuzma. They like what they're getting there. They like what they're giving up, but they're willing to give it up for the players you'd be giving up. I can already feel people listening to this and be like, ah, no, you can't trade THT for these guys. I can understand that standpoint. This is more a, we want to win in the next 2 years, and this would be a trade to help that. It's going to hurt you long-term, assuming you keep THT around long-term, which I think is the Lakers' plan at this point in time. So this is certainly a... Along with Ingles trade, both of them are, in a way, like, we need to go win now or soon. So I kind of get it. But no, Damian Jones is a real basketball player. And we saw him perform well with the Lakers. We saw him perform well in Sacramento after he left the Lakers. I kind of – keep in touch isn't the right way to phrase it. But I kept tabs on how he was performing there. And it, rightfully, they signed him to a multi-year deal. He's a legitimate basketball player that given the Lakers' injury situation, Drummond was just a better move at the time. I think if the Lakers were healthy, we might see them try to keep Jones. They were. Think back to after those games, he was playing well. Guys on the team in the locker room were saying, this guy earned a deal. He needs to be back. He'll be back next year. This is Lakers players. Lakers players are saying that.
They're chasing the big fish. Mm-hmm. And it actually kind of doesn't matter. That's kind of their downfall. It shoots for the stars on every play. You know, every small move instead of making the single.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think Jones is a very hard hit single. really good exit velocity on Damian Jones as a single. But let's start with the guy that would be headlining the deal that you don't want any part of. No, and I'm talking about gold badge, dead eye shooter, Buddy Hield. I'm talking about 99th percentile three-point shot making, 99th percentile perimeter shooting, talent grade, 46% corner three-point shooter, 39% three-point shooter, taking F-quality shots. This is someone who is another good, not great. He's not as good as Ingles, playmaker. B plus volume, A minus efficiency, B plus versatility, B plus quality. That's pretty good. That's going to help. Another guy that's run some ball screens. He's not as good at finishing at the rim. He's not as good at getting to the rim as Joe Ingles. He is a shooter on offense. And another off-screen guy, 70% of the Kings' off-screen possessions this year were for Buddy Hield. That's higher than any player in the NBA this season. So he is, if you're going to run that kind of play, and we've seen what Luke Walton's offense can look like with that, he's the guy you're going to go to. So I also like him for similar reasons as Ingles. I think Ingles is better now. I think from a having them for a few years standpoint, Hield might end up being the better guy 2, 3, 4 years from now. But I agree that there are defensive issues with him much more so than with Ingles, and am anxiously awaiting for you to rip this one apart.
I don't know. I guess like this one, I have a less kind of logical answer for, because on paper, the trade does make sense. I will say, though, this would have to be after THT probably got signed, because the money won't match. But
yep.
So I'm not. And exactly,
that would need to happen for Damian Jones to be eligible to be traded. He can't be traded for another month.
So this would be a move that would happen in like September, because you'd have to sign THT and then wait like 60 days and then trade him, because I don't think you can aggregate a sign and trade player, right? I don't know the exact rules, but I feel like that's how this, the let's put that aside.
I mean, you could just sign and trade him out, I would assume. Either they would have to have it set up to start with, and because you're trading him out, not in, it doesn't hard cap the Lakers, or like you're saying, after they sign him, they would have to wait and then trade him afterwards.
So my hesitation on this is I've just never really seen it from Buddy, and all the what you described is accurate. He's a great shooter. He's never really done it for me, and in a lot of different ways, like him getting upset after the Bogdanovich thing in Sacramento. It's a lot of entitlement coming there to me for a guy who wasn't playing that great, getting a big contract and upset, you know, little red flags here and there. I just how his IQ manifests on the court. He's prone to taking pretty bad shots from what I've seen. So there's, it makes sense on paper. Having a guy off screen like that would be so awesome. But it's, I don't think it's worth it for what he gives up on the defensive end. And if that means KCP is still in your closing lineup, if Buddy can't be in a closing lineup, this trade is not worth it.
What I think Buddy's good enough as an off-ball defender that he can certainly stay on the court.
When he get hunted, though?
When you get hunted, and we've seen the Lakers hunt. We've seen the Lakers hunt the past 2 years, and teams start stunting off the wings. They pre-rotate a little bit in the paint. Like, there are things to do to help prop up a weaker on-ball defender, which makes me feel better than if Like THT. I don't know how to help THT defensively nearly in the same ways as I feel X's and O's wise you can help Buddy Hield. Because if THT's just falling asleep and missing rotations or late on rotations, you got to get better. The answer is get better.
Sure.
With Buddy Hield, the answer isn't he needs to get better. It can be he can be the same talent level, and you can do things around him to help improve him. We've seen LeBron James, like AD, isolating against Tyler Hero, against Goran Dragic, against, plenty of, over the rounds last year and this year, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, like guys that you can go after. Devin Booker a little bit less so now, but guys you can go after, and defenses just send extra help. And if you're not organized about countering that, which a lot of teams are not, it can help. So I think it's less of an easy fit. With Ingles, you just throw him in there, and I feel okay. With Hield, you throw him in there, and you have to be prepared. And if it were an offensive issue,
Is he going to know how to adjust when he weak on the side pick and rolls? Is he going to know, like, okay, first time we're blitzing? And you know what I mean? This is a complex defensive scheme. Like, it's not rocket science, if you haven't played like this, and to me, there's at least a reasonable argument that based on THT's age, he will get better with experience. That's not true of Buddy. Buddy kind of is who he is, right? And yes, you can get better at those reads, but I don't see, is he going to be making those pre-rotations that KCP, that Caruso make?
I don't think he's going to be a Caruso KCP quality defender. I think he can be a good enough defender that he can stay on the court in crunch time.
Fair enough.
I think that's the ceiling for him.
That's the baseline that I need to get to even consider this trade, right? Is, yeah.
Because if he's best in crunch time
against a good team.
Question for you. Is THT going to be in your crunch time lineups? Is Kyle Kuzma?
Not when he's 20.
In your crunch time lineups?
Not when he's 20, but maybe when he's 22.
What about next year? Is he 20 next year? 21, 22?
We'll see.
All right. Okay. Because that's okay, I get what you're going for. That's where you're setting the bar. But if what you're trading up isn't at that bar.
But, okay, is there a world where THT is a better basketball player than Buddy Hield in the National Basketball Association?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why he's valuable.
Is he a better fit, though?
That's almost irrelevant. I'm just saying in this context of trading him away, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reason you can trade him away for Buddy Hield is because he's 21 and has a potential.
Yeah.
So you don't have anyone else on the roster like that.
Mm-hmm. And while we value him that way, I'll tell you from speaking to some of the folks of the other teams, THT wasn't really, like, they're not looking at THT the way they're looking at a lot of rising young stars. We see that potential because we see it every day. Mm-hmm. I don't
Which
know.
Teams?
If, opposing fans certainly don't.
If you're Cleveland, I would be more teams? Interested in THT than if I'm, you know, Washington or something.
THT, Cleveland was more interested in, like, Kyle Kuzma.
The white guy.
And, yeah, they were interested in the white guy, and they were interested. Like, they gave me a crazy trade package for Larry Nance Jr. I couldn't get them to give me a trade package for Colin Sexton. Like, the package they were demanding for Nance was what I would have thought they would have demanded for
what
Sexton.
Was it for Nance?
Oh, God, it was like, I think it was like Kuzma, KCP, and Caruso or something like that for Larry
okay.
Nance.
Okay.
So that's a no. But like I talked to people from Jazz, Wizards, Pacers, Timberwolves, Kings, Magic, Trailblazers, Raptors, Pistons, Sixers, Thunder, Knicks, Cavs, and Hawks. And nobody was like, oh, man, got to go get THT. Here's a great asset. So what he is worth in the marketplace, from a fan perspective, it might be lower than the team with the data and the scouts and stuff like that. So I think there may be a differential there, but I think he's more valuable. I think my point is he's more valuable to us than he is on the trade market right now.
Okay.
Because until he is in those crunch time lineups, until he is starting, there's going to be like a lagging effect. The marketplace might be a little bit behind on him. I guess, think you're going to find like a trendy GM that's like, oh man, I got to go get this guy before he breaks out.
I guess what I'm trying to say too is like, there are different kinds of trade pieces, right? There's the Kuzma who has been a bench player on a championship team, but that's valuable to championship contenders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the THT who Cleveland, Orlando, you know, some of these rebuilding teams.
Sacramento.
They are more. Yeah, Sacramento. He should be more valuable to them than those other teams.
Right. Less so like a Utah or Philly or one of those.
Right. So to me, THT makes more sense in going to a Sacramento than a KCP. And it's kind of nice to keep that veteran who has a role. You know what I mean? And to have buddy insurance. So maybe I'm talking myself into it a little bit more.
Yeah. I think a key thing for me would be if I'm bringing in a shooter that I question their defense, I need to keep KCP.
Yeah.
I can trade THT. I can't trade KCP.
Right.
So maybe we throw some polls out afterwards and people rip apart the trades too. But I think I would do both of these. I think either of these helps the Lakers win more the next 2 years, 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to cover? Oh,
I think it's an argument. You want to run through a couple of these a little quick. So,
yeah. Well, so there's also Damian Jones. So think about that as well. Nice cheap guy.
No.
We don't have to dig it. The listeners know about Damian Jones.
Yes.
But he's a roll and cut big that can defend the rim, play some mobile screen coverages. would be helpful to have in a playoff setting.
I still, like, if Mark's on the roster and if Drummond comes back, there's still, like, a very low chance at playing time for Damian Jones.
I don't think Drummond's going to – here's what I would think. If I were running the Lakers and doing this trade, I'd say Gasol is my floor spacer.
Tim.
Drummond,
bet you $100 right now the Lakers give Andre Drummond the mini taxpayer MLE.
And he accepts it?
Yeah.
I will take that bet.
Done.
You're
going to be sad and broke.
Yeah, I will be. if I'm making this trade, if I'm the Lakers, I've got Jones to be that JaVale McGee kind of guy that's offensively, he's going to catch lobs, he's going to roll, he's going to get putbacks, stuff like that. Defensively, he can play more mobile screen coverages than a Drummond, than a Gasol. And that's something we were just like annoyed with in the playoffs that the Suns attacked, is those big men that are not as mobile. So he's a good piece, Tom. I promise he's good at basketball.
He's not a needle mover.
But he's not like your like star. He's not your starter. He's a good throw.
I get it.
He's
more than a throw. You're talking about an 11th guy, dude, and a center at that. It's the most fucking replaceable thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you need it to match salary, fine. But, like, it's not a selling point to make the trade better to me.
I'm going to make a note of this, and then a couple weeks from now when we go over free agent center options for the men, I'm going to ask you which of them do the things Damian Jones can do. He's a throw-in, but he'd be a useful throw-in.
Okay. All right, let's move on real quick to get through some of these other ones. So
can I run through some of the ones I wouldn't do?
Yeah, I wouldn't do any of these. These are garbage. So
okay, here were a couple where I was gauging price. So for all these, I was gauging price and then negotiating a little bit. Kemba Walker, the price I got for Kemba Walker was Kuzma, KCP, the 22 pick, and Alphonso McKinney, who I'm okay with.
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that.
Why do you have to give the 22 pick? Why?
That's what they wanted. I don't know. It's a bad deal. I wouldn't do it.
No. Yeah. So the thing with Kemba is basically the price should be whatever it costs to match salary.
Pretty much.
Honestly, frankly.
Yeah. He's not the player he used to be. And he's had some injury issues. And I'm not among all of these. Like, I'm just like, that's not worth it.
No.
Another one. So I talked about, I looked into Beal. I couldn't get a Beal deal done. I have two deals for you here that are for shooters that are going to be pricier than we'd want to pay. One of them is THT and Kyle Kuzma for Davis Bertans, who, again, elite shooter, negative on defense. The fit might be a little bit tough. He's an elite shooter, so it's like there's more than a 0% chance it could happen, but
the thing is,
it doesn't matter for the Lakers. It doesn't really matter. They're over the cap anyway.
Well, it's the length.
That's true.
Yeah, four more years.
He signed a great, he signed an awesome deal for him last year. Yeah, he signed like a 580, I think it was.
Yeah, for him, like, good luck.
Good for him.
Yeah.
But
he's a nice player. It's,
he's a player I really like.
Sure.
He also disappeared in the
playoffs, too.
Mm-hmm. He was playing through some injury, but he did. Joe Ingles hasn't been fantastic in the past couple of playoffs either. He's been okay. But he hasn't been the same player he was in the regular season.
So, I'm not saying they lost because Davis
KCP
pretends.
Enter any Laker player's name here. It wasn't as good in the playoffs this year as we were hoping they'd be. So, all right. So that one, that's pretends another one where if you do make that trade, you still keep KCP. So it's another go get a shooter that's a little bit negative on defense. Keep KCP, trade out Kuz and THT. So I like it less, but it was worth writing down for me. I'd think about it. I don't think I'd do it, but I'd think about it. I don't think I'd do it because some of these other deals I like way more. Another one I don't think I'd do is THT in the 22 pick for Anthony Simons, who is another elite shooter. He's kind of under the radar. He's been a really, really good shooter for the past few years.
Defensively, he is not good, though. Yeah.
He's small and he's not good defensively. His defensive role has changed like every year he's been in the league. Mm-hmm. They can't seem to find a good spot to hide him.
I actually kind of like him too. Isn't this his third year? I feel like they're going to have to extend him soon. So, like, he's eligible for
rookie extension, now, I think.
Yeah.
If he's not extended, he's super cheap next year, and then he's a restricted free agent after that.
Yeah.
So, you could keep him around. Again, really good shooter, negative on defense, and you keep KCP. So, similar style deal. He is a smaller guy. Bertans is a bigger guy. Heald is, like, a 2-3, 3-2. So, those are some of your...
Three shooting.
3-point shooting, elite, yeah. Very, very good. Okay. Yeah, really good, and it's been really good for the past few years.
So be an upgrade there at least. You're paying a pick for THT for upgraded shooting.
Yeah, here's how I went about this. I pulled up our perimeter shooting line, like leaderboard, and I just went down the list, and I was like, this guy, no. Okay, we might be able to trade for him, And then I went and talked to people from those teams. Yeah, it's that one, the Bertans and the Heald are similarly structured where you're keeping KCP, you're trading for shooting. I just like the Heald one the most. And then, so those are the three I don't think I do. There were two that I asked about and actually surprisingly got yeses to. And I think the team might want more, but I don't know if these would happen anymore. And that's Kuzma and the 22 pick for Malcolm Brogdon. Or Miles Turner. I was told same price for either one. I would take them both. I like both of those trades. It would keep me from doing some of the other ones we said we'd liked earlier. And the thing here is, I think it might be pricier than this. And I think that the Pacers would be less inclined to do this now that they've hired Rick Carlisle. I don't think you hire Rick Carlisle to blow it up. So I don't think it's just like the Jeremy Grant thing. The situation may have changed in the past week or so. Yeah. But if you can go get Brogdon, that's a great, great piece. Another guy that's a strong shooter, pick and roll ball handler. Turner is great as well. Elite finisher, great roll man, elite rim protector. Like he was on the defensive player of the year. He was in that race for a good bit this year. So I don't know. Brogdon can play on ball, off ball. If you can take these, I'd take these.
Either of those trades are like a 500-foot home run.
Mm-hmm.
Either of them.
Yeah. Would you take Kuzin 22 for Miles Turner over literally any other trade I've listed so far that would be for a shooter?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think we talked a little bit about this last week when we were kind of starting this process, and I really like Malcolm Brogdon. I still feel like if I had the choice, pairing Miles Turner with Anthony Davis is like a 10-year like nasty front court.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like maybe 10 years is generous with Miles Turner's life, you know, like half life in the NBA, but Turner can shoot threes. He's probably not as good of it as some of the other players.
He wasn't good this year. He was good last year.
I think he can get there. He can make a corner three, but the rim protection and the ability to actually have quick foot speed and like a pick and roll, you know what I mean, is very enticing to me. And again, I guess I lean more toward I see the defensive potential of that team as just being a continued just nasty pain in the ass for every other team in the league. But Brogdon is also very, very good at basketball, and I like watching him.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think an approach shift for me going into this offseason is I'm chasing more offensive guys that have good standalone offensive value. I don't need to trust that the Lakers were going to run them in the perfect plays or things like that. I know the Lakers are going to optimize defenders. So there are more negative defensive players or average defensive players on the list I've provided today than I would have provided a year ago because of what we've seen Frank Vogel and his staff do. Negative defenders compared to offensive players that like there's more in them, but we're not seeing that tapped quite into. Miles Turner. So I thought he was a floor spacer as well. I know he takes the threes. His 3-point shot making the past 2 years has been a D and an F. Was it good in 2018, 2019? Because I thought he was a floor spacer as well. Or at least he's used that way.
Doesn't seem like it's been the best situation the last 2 years.
He had an A-. He had
all the way.
He shot really, really well in 2018, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
But not the past 2 years. So that's one that's
he's
like
playing next to
trusted,
Sabonis, right? A lot of the time.
But how does that impact? Yeah, but I mean, Tom, we adjust for the difficulty. He was a D-plus the year before that. So he had one of the past 4 seasons. He was a good 3-point shooter.
I'm saying that situation has been a nightmare. And it doesn't seem like a lot of players are happy there, which is why they're even considering trading some of their better players. Mm-hmm. Because it's just not working. Yeah. It seems like it's run its course. And I agree that it's less
likely
to happen.
Well, they just changed the coach, though.
I agree. But at the same time,
TJ Warren sat out last year. Because
he
opted for surgery. Yeah, he opted for a season-ending surgery instead of trying to take other routes that would allow him to play sooner because he just didn't want to deal with it.
But Rick Carlisle's a no-nonsense guy. So if one of these dudes comes in and they're not focused, I don't doubt that one of these guys could be on the trading block, at trade deadline again.
Yeah. I don't trust Turner's shooting, but I like a lot of what else he provides.
Yeah.
I guess that's where I am with him. But overall, I'd still do that deal as well.
I mean,
now
both of them.
There are two more deals that I'd consider that I, there are a couple things to think about that. So I guess the first one, again, for a shooter, would be KCP and two future second round picks is what I negotiated for Terrence Ross. You get shooting, you're big, big downgrade defensively, and you're not left with KCP as a guy to fall back on in that way. What do you think about that deal?
When you pull up Terrence Ross's missed games in the last 5 years, you would reject that deal.
Okay.
So let's give it a big space here. I'll edit it out. And then Tim will come up with the answer right now.
He played 46 games this year, 69 the year before, 81 the year before that. He played 20 games in 2017, 2018. He played 54 games. Okay.
Eh. So like 60% of the games, 70% of the games?
What have his injuries been? Is it random unluckiness or is it like this dude has a bad knee that's
always
bad?
Out?
Okay. Okay. Because some guys...
Especially second half of the year.
Okay. Because there will be dudes that just have... they're just unlucky with injuries and not in a way that's like sustainable, yeah. If that's the word you want to use. But then there are other guys that just have like chronic issues that like... Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know if Terrence Ross is like meaningfully better than KCP right now. On offense, he certainly is.
On offense, I think the gap overall, on offense isn't larger than the gap on defense in a way that allows KCP to overall be better. Here's the one situation where I can. Okay. I'd say, yes, I think KCP is better overall.
Is it 2 seconds worth more than?
I don't think so.
I don't know if I care about seconds, but still, we got good second round picks the last few years, you know, when we have them.
Here's the one thing I'd look at. The price for this deal allows you to do it in addition to basically every other deal we've covered. So if you go if you go get Miles Turner and you don't get one of the shooters that are in any of these other deals, this does get you a shooter. And if you're adding Miles Turner, him and AD defensively, is maybe that can make up for some of the defense. But that would be, I think, the one time I'd look at this. Otherwise, I don't think I need to make both this trade and one of the other trades to go get two shooters and downgrade the defense that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be aware of this, but I'm not sure I'd do it. And I guess you'd have to see how the market for Ross looks. Maybe you get him for just KCP. Maybe you get him for just some of the seconds. I don't think his value is super high for a lot of the reasons we've covered today.
Yeah.
And then the last trade was, so Malik Beasley, who's currently in jail, for just the 22 pick.
Maybe we should trade him for KCP. KCP. Convict for convict. I'm sorry, it's a few years ago, but I'm not gonna forget.
Yeah. So from what I understand, Malik Beasley pulled a gun on someone who drove into his driveway and the police were called, and then the police discovered firearms and drugs in his house, and that is why he is in prison currently.
Well, is that's this recent one, the time before he had domestic violence charges. So
I forgot about that.
Fuck,
all right.
Malik Beasley.
Never mind.
Yeah.
All right. Never mind.
Okay. So that's mostly it on trades. I it's hard, you know, we're speculating. We don't know all the players that are even available in some of these trade talks, right? So it's hard to know, but this is a good kind of idea for Lakers fans around who's possible and what's realistic. Again, we reached out to other bloggers and people who cover the teams because they have context on their side of team that, you know, they would want and why they'd want certain of our players. But Tim, before you go, there's a couple things I wanted to bring up. And the domestic violence part reminded me that while we were recording this right now, Jason Kidd was officially hired as the Dallas Mavericks head coach. And Nico Harrison was hired as their general manager. So, you know, any thoughts on Jason Kidd's tenure as a Lakers assistant coach?
It's hard to say anything because Frank Vogel doesn't tell us who does what.
Yeah.
So from what I could tell, the players liked him. From the background information we have, he doesn't seem like a great person. and when we think about, the Lakers shouldn't do that because this guy had this charge against him. Well, the Lakers did have Jason Kidd on their staff.
Yeah.
So I don't know where the Lakers' moral compass is.
Right.
But he is someone that because I don't really know what he was doing, but I am familiar with his background and what he was responsible for on previous teams, I see this as an opportunity for the Lakers to make an upgrade, specifically to go hire an offensive coordinator, basically. Go hire a coach that has an offensive skill set that wasn't just on a team that ran good offense. You could pick a random assistant coach from a random good offensive team, and they might be able to tell you the playbook, but they might not be able to call the plays or teach the plays or build in the concepts or build in the counters to the concepts. Like, if you're a janitor outside a professor giving the same speech every day, you can probably recite some of the speech, but if you're asked any questions about it, it's going to fall apart quickly. You need somebody who understands what they're doing and can win that tactical battle. Mm-hmm. And that's not really Jason Kidd's background.
Right.
So him out the door, I would bring someone in the door. I don't care what they think about defense. They're not in charge of defense.
Right. So I know you have a name. I know you have a name.
Yeah. So this will, we'll need to have another podcast because I have probably another hour of of content on them and their offense. The guy I'd go after is David Adelman. And David Adelman is the current offensive coordinator for the Denver Nuggets. He was on Frank Vogel's staff in Orlando for a year. Here's his background. Just we'll leave it there. We won't dig too deep. But his background is he coached, and so his dad, obviously Rick Adelman, really good, one of the best NBA coaches ever. Probably I think he's like seventh or sixth in wins all time.
Yeah, he was creator that Kings coach of that 2000s run.
Yep, he was the guy who created the corner offense, which to this day is used. But so his son played and then coached in high school, won three titles in Portland and the city. He was a Timberwolves player development coach for a few years under his dad. And then the last year under his dad, he became the offensive coordinator. Once his dad left, his dad left because his mom was sick. So his dad retired. But after his father left, he was retained. He was good enough that they kept him on staff and allowed him to continue running the offense under two different new coaches. That's how good he was. So he coached for Flip Saunders before he passed away, and then Sam Mitchell. And then he went from there to Orlando to be an assistant under Frank Vogel. And I was able to listen to a podcast where David was talking, and like he had the nicest things to say about Vogel. He mentioned that like Vogel let him have a huge voice in the locker room, helped him or let him like run the offense and let him like go interview for his next role when he was still under contract. It didn't need to let him go. So it seemed like that relationship was, I mean, again, from a couple minutes in a podcast, but it seemed like that relationship was strong. And then in Orlando, they were tanking. They didn't have a great roster. There was a lot of front office flux. There were some injuries. They didn't even run the corner offense. So that stood out to me. It was like, this isn't his offense. This is some other stuff. But then after that, and that familiarity with Vogel, I think certainly matters for his shot at getting the Lakers job. He then went to Denver. He became the offensive coordinator from 2017 until now. And so from hearing him talk and you know, reading more about him, like he's really into the teaching, the concepts, introducing offense. He was truly like developing the game plans for everyone they were playing against. It wasn't how a lot of teams run it, where a different assistant coach will put together a scouting report. Like basically like once a week you put together a scouting report and then you present it and then you go do whatever. This was the guy who was the mastermind behind the offense. And I think that matters. And if we're looking at the offensive optimization data that we have at B-Ball Index that looks at like how talented is the roster compared to how much impact did they get out of the players? His average percentile, if you ignore the tanking seasons, was 73rd percentile, which is pretty darn good and would be a big upgrade from the average to below average we've seen from Frank Vogel and his staff to this point. So I think there's certainly a background there. I have a bunch more notes, but it makes sense because he runs an offense that's centered around a star low to high post player, which the Lakers have in LeBron James and Anthony Davis. They leverage the playmaking of that player a good bit, which those two guys can do. Drummond can do. If Drummond comes back, he would be a good fit for this offense. It uses a lot of spacing and motion and cutting and screening and would be a good fit for the lack of ball handling the Lakers have. And it's like there are really good concepts and principles, but it's not like a super rigorous sort of structure in a way that I think would fit well with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So a lot of the red flags you would have about X's and O's not worried about here. A lot of the things that the Lakers have been bad at, the cutting, the screening, the, you know, creating space, this is a good offense for and he's been a good coach for. And if we look at like the Lakers struggling to counter post help, this is the best team in the league at that. Nikola Jokic is able to be Nikola Jokic because you can't send a double team against him or he's going to burn you with his passing. And it's not because he's a great passer, and he is a great passer, but it's because there's a structure around that. There's a plan around that. And the Lakers didn't have that this year. This would directly address one of their largest holes offensively and would help them, especially with LeBron aging, build an offense around the Lakers players as is. I think it's a great fit. I know we need to wrap up, but I think it's a fantastic fit. Home run. It would be a home run hire. He has that familiarity, and I don't see any issues with it. I couldn't find any red flags, and I really want to see him go after this. So let's go.
I like it.
Shout out from the mountaintops.
Yeah.
David Adelman's the guy we want.
I like it. No, that's a low key one. Obviously all these coaches' sons, you know, definitely are kind of born and bred with basketball in their DNA. And you do see some of these guys, you know, it doesn't always work out with your Ryan Saunders, you know, but he's not a head coach. He has a defined role. And I like that. Mm-hmm. There's a very specific reason for it. So let's talk more about that. There's other candidates out there I think could be interesting. I mean, just consider this, Tim. You know, we had Vogel, who we hired as our head coach. But the other two candidates were Monty Williams and Ty Lue, who are fighting each other right now in the Western Conference Finals. So the Lakers, at least as far as, you know, post the Jim Buss era, Genie has had a really good, you know, after Magic, obviously, job at kind of knowing what they need and what they are looking for in a practical sense. So we'll talk a lot more about that in details. Here are some trades for you guys that, you know, you can tweet at us, try and get a poll up. But, you know, send us a picture of a 5-star review and we will get you an invite into the Discord.
And next time we will, I think it'll be a clinic on what the corner offense is and how exactly it matches the Lakers personnel and how I would foresee, like, what are its principles? What are the alignments? And then what sorts of jobs would we see like KCP or Alex Caruso or whoever be asked to do? Because I think it's really interesting and it's a super modern style. That'd be a great fit. Unless the Lakers hire someone else, in which case.